If you're a label reader, this one's for you. Because your skin deserves more than empty promises. At Hiba Botanica, every formula is made in-house. In small batches using organic, truly non-toxic ingredients. Plastic-free packaging, clean, effective botanicals. And safe for all skin types, even acne-prone. No greenwashing, no filler. Just skincare that's gentle, non-comedogenic, and designed with intention. Hiba Botanica. Non-toxic, plastic-free. Always safe for your skin. Shop online at HibaBotanica.com. That's X.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Liberation Day plus one. I welcome my colleague, Professor Evan Ellis, the Latin American research professor at the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute, to look first at the Americas, our sphere, our hemisphere, and the tariff story from Washington that is so fresh, interpretations everywhere right now in all the major capitals of the planet, especially in the Americas. The FT writes, Donald Trump has launched an assault on the global trade order, imposing a barrage of tariffs on U.S. imports in a move that sent financial markets reeling and deepened fears over the world economy's health. Professor, a very good evening to you. Thank you very much. We begin with the tariff talk in the Americas. I heard clearly Mexico mentioned. I did not write down a list of other states, but everybody's involved. Chile because of copper, Brazil and Argentina and Venezuela and Colombia all involved. But Mexico was singled out. I was surprised by a Financial Times report this morning. I don't have it in front of me, but I heard the reader saying that, surprising me and everybody else, Mexico could be a net winner in all of these machinations that are underway, given that there are X number of days till the tariffs are applied. Mexico is not, at this point, the loudest voice in the room. Why not, Professor? Good day to you.
Good day to you, John. What Claudia Sheinbaum has done, and apparently has done very successfully, is to avoid escalating rhetoric with President Trump. She has been notably very accommodating, in her own words, keeping very cool-headed. And that seems to have paid off in the negotiations with the Trump administration over a variety of different tariffs. As you pointed out, what was announced yesterday, globally, the 10% tariff essentially on everyone, plus the reciprocal tariffs, which were various different levels depending on the amount of perceived tariffs on U.S. products, including non-tariff barriers. And so the way that it actually came out was very favorable towards Mexico, in that Mexico and Canada received a waiver from the 10% global tariff. In addition, Mexico did not receive any of the reciprocal tariffs. Now, important to point out that Mexico is still subject to the 10% tariffs on steel and aluminum that was imposed just a short while ago, as well as a tariff on auto parts. So it will be that coming in through USMCA, not the autos themselves, which are covered by USMCA, but those parts that come in from third countries through that production will be tariffed indirectly. And so there will be some increases in tariffs on things coming in through Mexico. But in terms of the big tariffs, again, exempted from the 10% global across the board announced yesterday, exempted from reciprocal tariffs, and frankly, exempted from some of the punitive tariffs that President Trump had previously talked about imposing on Mexico over cooperation on migration and fentanyl. So it does certainly look like Mexico came out as the big winner, but it's a little bit like the joke of the two hunters trying to run away from the bear, the one putting on his tennis shoes, and he says to the other, I don't have to outrun the bear, I just have to outrun you. Mexico is the country putting on its tennis shoes at the moment in the Trump tariff war.
Sheinbaum, according to the Reuters, said at her daily morning press conference that Mexico will, quote, announce a comprehensive program, not a tit-for-tat on tariffs. Let's see what the announcement they make. So she was waiting before the announcement. I saw no surprises considering the concern of many states. Things were already in place. So that is good news. Otherwise, let's mention the big state of the Americas, except for the U.S., that would be Brazil. Do you see that badly hurt by this?
Well, John, Brazil did incur more wrath on tariffs, but probably is less impacted. And the important thing is understanding that while Brazil does trade a substantial amount with the United States, it is not in the position of Mexico, where literally 80% of Mexico's exports go to the United States. And so Brazil, as I understand, was hit by the 10% across the board tariff that Mexico was exempted from. Brazil has been affected in its metals exports by the previous steel and auto tariff. And indeed, my understanding is the Brazilian legislature is currently putting together what is expected to be the announcement of some sort of reciprocal tariff or response that will probably be coming in the coming days. And that will have some impact. For Brazil, the irony is that in the world that we live in which countries to varying degrees have other options, historically, when the United States put big tariffs on China back in 2018, 2019, one of the biggest beneficiaries was Brazil, because China then stopped buying things from the United States, or at least reduced agricultural purchases and other things. And it turned to Brazil to make up that difference with what is, I believe, estimated to be a 54% total effective tariff on China. What we're likely to see, I think, from China is a tariff escalation, China buying less from the United States. And so although Brazil may suffer a hit in terms of tariffs and reduced demand on certain metals exports and other exports to the United States, most of Brazil's actual industrial production is from Mercosur. And Brazil will probably be a net beneficiary in terms of a significant increase in agricultural exports and strategic metals exports to China as it moves away from the United States.
Stories to come about the tariff announcement by the President of the United States and negotiations we can assume underway between now and the so-called deadlines that were announced April 5th and April 9th for this or that. So we turn to things that have substance right now. Panama. Panama Canal could not be more important to the defense of the Americas, nor to the defense of the Pacific, as I'm told by colleagues, because of the need to rush in the event of a catastrophe, supplies and warships to the Pacific, to Japan, and the Philippines and our other allies. This is under the World War scenario of an attack on Taiwan. We come to a news story in Reuters that allows the professor to update us on the negotiation. It reads, BlackRock could hit another roadblock and it is in its attempt to secure control of two flagship ports near the Panama Canal once the Central American country releases an audit on a 25-year concession granted to Hong Kong-based C.K. Hutchinson. Final signature of the deal in Panama. This is BlackRock, the equity firm headed by Larry Fink, offering to buy the two Hutchinson ports along with worldwide ports that are owned by Hutchinson out of Hong Kong. Final signature of the deal in Panama, part of a broader $22.8 billion transaction between BlackRock and C.K. Hutchinson, including over 40 ports in 23 countries, is expected to be delayed as criticism grows in China. We knew that delay was coming late Friday. Now it's confirmed in Reuters. Professor, the backstory on this is enormous. Molino's the president. C.K. Hutchinson is owned by a billionaire out of Hong Kong named Li Ka-shing, who does not advertise his Communist Party links, but he's said to be under pressure from the central government, from the Communist Party, for selling to BlackRock. At the same time, Larry Fink is, I'm told, unhappy with the idea that the deal could be broken. He called the president after the deal was made, and Mr. Trump was extremely pleased. The Panama Canal is something that you at the U.S. Army War College have war-gamed over generations. So what is your interpretation of the delayed signature?
Thank you, John. For me, first of all, it's an illustration of the range of different corporate relationships between entities in China and the Chinese Communist Party, but a reminder that in all of those relationships, China has significant leverage. And so oftentimes we think about the Chinese SOEs, you know, such as Costco, that you know, operate, for example, the Peruvian port of Chiang Kai, and they regularly work with the PLA and under a doctrine called civil-military fusion. And we think of kind of a more direct cooperation. On the other end of the spectrum, you have companies such as, for example, Sany Heavy Industries, that would say that they are, you know, private companies and independent. But I think what you see in the case of Hutchison. So first of all, you know, this is a company that, on the one hand, you know, wants to say it's not an SOE. It was a Hong Kong-based country, but Hong Kong itself has come increasingly under the control, of course, of the Chinese Communist Party. Li Ka-shing, who, as you pointed out, has you know, PLA ties. And yet at the same time, Li Ka-shing has been trying to diversify his assets away from China and quietly get his money out of China. And at the end of the day, Li Ka-shing, I think, really found himself in between a rock and a hard place because, you know, with Hutchison's global operations, not only in Panama, but also in Mexico and in the Bahamas and others, Hutchison Ports came front and center as a target of the Trump administration and its focus on the way in which Chinese commercial assets could be used against the United States in time of war. And so I think smartly, Li Ka-shing said, you know, if I'm going to be a target, the best thing for me to do is sell off these assets because they are not going to perform well if I am a central target of the Trump administration. And so that deal with Larry Fink of BlackRock, you know, again, you know, selling off about $23 billion in port assets, it seems like that took the PRC by surprise. And really, the one of the key issues, I mean, aside from you know, Hutchison's importance in global logistics, is in time of war, those ports would potentially give the PRC options to be in the proximity of U.S. East Coast ports, for example, the case of the Bahamas, options to be in the coast of both East and West Coast U.S. ports in terms of Hutchison's various ports in Mexico, such as Lázaro Cárdenas and Veracruz, and certainly you know, the contribution that Hutchison's ports have in Panama, on both sides of the Panama Canal, creating options to have the physical proximity and the technical knowledge and the relationships that, you know, Chinese might be able to leverage to shut down the canal in a time of conflict. So I think for the PRC, losing those options was unacceptable. And so the interesting thing was that by initiating a threat of an antitrust operation against Hutchison's operations in China, which continued, and putting apparently other types of pressure, they're able to, even though Hutchison is not a Chinese full-fledged SOE, they were able to put enough pressure on Li Ka-shing that he was able to say, oh, maybe I need to rethink this deal for now. Now, as you also point out, John, the question is, there are a lot of other people upset in this high-stakes game. As I understand it, Larry Fink of BlackRock is threatened to pull his money out of Hong Kong because it also shows that, you know, if China can do this to Li Ka-shing, China can do this to anybody's operations in Hong Kong, which they now have, you know, control over. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And if that were not already complicated enough, there's actually a question in Panama of the two ports that Hutchison controls. It may very well have been that the way in which the concession for those ports was renewed in 2021 may have violated Panamanian law. And so, you know, farther putting a wrench in things, you have the Panamanian government, President Mulino, now basically saying, well, you may not be able to sell off these Panamanian assets because you may not have legally renewed the concession for them in the first place. So we need to look at this now too. So it is a big mess with a lot of players who are you know, fighting over a very, very high stakes game right now.
We're headed back to Mexico. Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College. I'm John Batchelor.
If you're a label reader, this one's for you. Because your skin deserves more than empty promises. At Hiba Botanica, every formula is made in-house, in small batches using organic, truly non-toxic ingredients. plastic-free packaging, clean, effective botanicals, and safe for all skin types, even acne-prone. No greenwashing, no filler, just skincare that's gentle, non-comedogenic, and designed with intention. Heba Botanica, non-toxic, plastic-free. Always safe for your skin. Shop online at HebaBotanica.com. That's X.
I'm Alastair Campbell from The Rest Is Politics.
Anish Kumar here from Pod Save the UK.
And Christiana Figueres from Outrage and Optimism.
Rising inequality, conflict, climate disaster, it's very hard to find reasons to be hopeful about the future.
That's why we're teaming up this September during the 80th General Assembly of the United Nations.
Along with Political Currency, Pod Save the World, The Week Junior, and more.
We'll discuss the stories that give us hope and answer the question, how does hope turn into action?
Look out for the Be Hope Takeover this September.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.